And it'll be great to have.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And we're here for the next 2 hours talking about cars and car repair stuff and questions about what oil should I use and what's the difference between regular and premium gasoline. And my technician says this and my shop says that. And we can talk about those kinds of things. It's easy to do. All you do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And then Gil picks up the phone and he says, you want to talk to Mark? And you say yes. And he says, okay. And then he whispers in my ear, there's, you know, Donna on line one. That's how it kind of works. Folks, there's a lot going on in the auto repair industry. In the 70s, we got to see, 60s and 70s, and to some extent the 80s, we got to see your car every 3,000 miles. So we would typically, as an industry, we'd change your oil and filter. And then we would, every other time you came in, we'd rotate your tires. But that's where the fuzziness starts, because our owner's manuals were not real precise. And so the what you did and where you did it and how you did it and all that other kind of stuff, it was different. It was just different. And so we started years ago that everybody was on a 3,000-mile oil change. That's what the door sticker was written for. We just added 3,000 miles to what's on your sticker. Today, phew, man, it is just like the Wild West. People are using oil change intervals. They're putting a sticker on your car that calls you back after 5,000 miles on a synthetic change, when in reality a synthetic change is somewhere between 10 and 15,000. So if they bring you back at 5, and then they do it again, and then they do it again, you're paying for oil changes that your car doesn't need. Can you put synthetic oil in an older car? Yes. I've been trained by Chevron. I've been trained by Valvoline. I know what I'm talking about. And when it comes to oil and its use and its benefits, I'll tell you. Let me give you an example of what the numbers mean on an oil. 2050, it flows like a 20 weight when it's cold or hot, and it flows like a 50, the other way around. Flows like a 20 weight when it's cold, a 50 weight when it's hot. I'm looking at my board and I'm looking at the phone and all that kind of stuff, so I get kind of confused sometimes. So in Arizona, we don't need an oil that flows at 20 degrees because we don't see that very often. Maybe in Flagstaff, maybe up on the Indian Reservation you can use it. But in reality, 20 weight flows like a 20 weight when it's cold, and it's, so that's a much thinner oil. It has all the other additives to it. It's just a thinner oil, and it still gets in between the moving pieces of metal, but the difference between 20 weight and 50 weight is the difference between water and peanut butter. And so the higher we go, the more peanut buttery we get. And obviously, if you drive your car hard, and if your car has 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 miles, you're probably going to be in a straight 30 weight. And it flows like a 30 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. A 2050 flows like a 20 weight when it's cold, and flows like a 50 weight when it's hot. So that's what all that new nomenclature means. Is there a brand difference? You know, I tell people all the time, just go buy your oil from Walmart. Oil is pulled out of the ground and made into a product by four companies for the United States: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Those are the four companies. Now, do they bottle for everybody else? You bet they do. If Wendy's had a quart of oil, they could order their oil from Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron, and they could put Wendy's super duper extra luber oil for your car. They could actually probably buy a 1030, because that's kind of a universal oil today. They could buy a 1030 and mark it as, we don't care if you have an old Volkswagen or if you have a brand new Cadillac or what you have. The fact of the matter, or a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW or an Audi, makes no difference. This oil will work. We know that that's not exactly the case, but it'd be fine. It just would be fine. In the old days, we used to step up our oil if our car was leaking oil or burning oil. And we go to a 30-weight straight, and then a 40-weight straight, and then a 50-weight straight. And I remember in high school, if your car leaked oil like a sieve and it smoked like some kind of a bomb, we'd put 60, 70, 80-weight in it, which is really gear oil. And gear oil is not really for the internal parts of an engine that's rubbing. Gear oil is where two gears hit one another, and when they rotate to one another, just very much like the sprocket on your bicycle and the chain that goes around it, the gear oil gets in between the teeth and acts like a cushion. So an 80 weight flows like an 80 weight when it's cold, and I suggest your car probably won't like that. But on the other hand, if your engine is loosey-goosey, it's 40 years old, it's leaking a little oil, it uses a little oil, then a 50 or 60 weight wouldn't hurt it because it's already well-worn and it's been around the world five times. The other day, somebody asked me when I changed my oil in my truck, and I said between 10 and 15,000 miles, and they said, well, how do you determine that? And I said, you know, if I'm in the city a lot, stop and go, and I've got four or five heat cycles in the day, then I'll change it a little bit more often. But if I'm running between Chandler and Payson on a regular basis, then I'm not going to, because I'm exercising the engine, I'm bringing the oil up to temperature, I'm running at 60, and what my wife would say 100, but that's not true. I'm running at 60, 65 miles an hour up and down the mountain, and so I go through one heat cycle a day as opposed to three heat cycles a day. And that's what it's all about. We want the internal temperature of the engine and the oil to be north of 212, because the water in the oil will turn to a vapor at 212. Remember your science. So as a result of that, we don't really worry about it, but that's why it says 1030 or 1050. It flows like a 10 weight when it's cold. It flows like a 50 weight when it's hot. If your car is an old 57 Chevy and it's knocking around and it's using a little oil, you could use a 2050. It'd start a lot better, a lot faster. But at the same time, when the engine got warm and the oil thick or got warm as well, it flows like a 50 weight when it's warm. So that would be a good oil for your old car. We got a caller already. I'll give you the phone number again, 602-508-0960. If you have a car problem, we can talk tires, we can talk spark plugs, we can talk oil, we can talk V8s and V6s and fuel injection and direct fuel injection. We can do anything you want. Or my wife and I are going to buy a new car, and this is what she wants, and this is what I want. Would you like to comment? But we have a caller. Gil? Gil?
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hello, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. The vehicle in question is a 2020 Toyota Yaris. That doesn't matter. I have a question about tires. It's got tires, and the one that they actually call for is a really hard to get odd size and about twice as expensive as something else. Somebody suggested another size to me. You know, the difference is going to be it's approximately a half inch taller. Now, providing I have room for that half inch taller, I do understand it may affect the speedometer and odometer a bit, but would that throw my computer into chaos?
Well, if the change is in the 5, 10, maybe 15% range, then I wouldn't really worry about it. But if you get up to the 30 and north of 30%, then I don't think that's a good idea. Why don't you just give me the sizes?
Okay. I've got them here real quick.
Okay. Take your time.
Oh, here they are. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The tire that they want you to put on it is a 185. 65, okay. R16.
Okay. Give me the rest of them.
The one that was suggested to me is, let me see if I'm on here. I'm sorry. No, let me back up. The one that they're calling for the car is a 185, 60 R16. And a gentleman suggested I might think about a 205, 65 R16. I do understand the 205 will be a bit wider. I don't think that's a problem, but that's the two different tire sizes.
Okay, well, the 205 is the ratio, and it's actually better described as the height of the tire. So a 205, 65, the width of the tire is 65% of the height of the tire. And those are just round figures. I'm not going to do the math because I don't have a calculator handy. The 185 to a 185 60, there's a difference of insignificant width between the 65 series and the 60 series. Insignificant.
Okay.
You also notice that the 205 is also is very similar with respect to width. It's a 65R. So 65R, 60R, 65R, forget the middle number. Now we're just down to the 185, 185, and the 205. I don't like the idea that you're 205, you're going to jump to that kind of a number for a couple reasons. In reality, whether you choose to or not, your speedometer is going to be off. And when you go to sell it, when they ask you, is this the actual odometer or not, you have to go no. But people just say yes all the time, and they lie about it. So you can decide for what you want to do. I don't see the benefit in going to a 205 because the 205 is a taller tire. And what happens if the fronts rub? What happens when you turn all the way to the extreme left and or extreme right? The tire will rub on the inner rubber fender liner. It makes a little bit of noise, and it's uncomfortable, and it's unsettling. So I don't know, and you're going to pay more for the 205 65 16. And so
no, actually, it's all from this goofy 185 60R 16. That 205 is one of the reasons he suggested it. It's oh my goodness, at least a quarter less in price, or maybe even half. I mean, this okay. this 185 60R 16 is for some reason just half people don't carry it and various things like that. That's why I was trying to, you know, get away from that. Okay. But you said the 205 and the 185, that's the height of them.
Yeah, that's a big difference. So let me ask you a question. Without you saying the name of the shop or the name of the guy, is this guy sell tires exclusively? Is this guy been around for 20 years? Is this guy just talking price to you? Is he trying to sell you something and it's based on price? Is that, you know, can you answer any of those questions?
Well, yeah, probably a little bit all the above. It's a tire shop only. I don't know if the man's been in the business for a long time. And, you know, I was shopping around and, you know, concerned, you know, quite a bit with price. I mean, you know, $700 and almost $800 for four tires is just, you know, killing me.
Well, here. Wait a minute. $800 includes mounting and balancing, FET, and sales tax. So the $800 isn't really representative of a $200 tire. You're going to pay FET and sales tax, and if you buy any warranty, you'll pay for all of that at the end of the deal. So I really can't determine the quality of the information you're getting, but I'm a tire expert, and I wouldn't buy the 205. Mm-hmm. And if you want to save money, then get the cheaper one of the 185 16s. I would certainly get Discount Tire involved, and there's a variety of other tire stores, and you can do that from home. Mm-hmm. You call them up and you say, hey, can I get a price for four 185 65 16s and 185 60 16s? And so you can ask them to, and I want them out the door price. How much do I have to write my check for before I leave home? That's kind of the conversation.
Right.
And so I think okay. that would help you, but I'm a little uncomfortable with, now, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, and I'll tell you why. I have giant monster tires on my truck, but I also haul horse trailers. I'm in the snow. I'm in the mud. These are aggressive tires. It lifts the truck up a little bit. I'm hauling horses and all that kind of stuff, but I also increase the ply and the weight limit of the tires I have because every once in a while I'm at the weight limit or I might even be a little bit higher than the weight limit. So for all those reasons, I'm going to protect my passengers and my wife and my kids and my dogs, and I'm going to go a little bit, you know, better tire than I had before. Anyway, Bob, thank you for the conversation. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. We have five of them, and if you have a comment or a question, give me a call. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to go straight to the phones real quick, and we're going to start with Esther and Sharon. But Esther, you're first. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2004 Mercury Grand Marquis with 97,700 and some odd miles. My kids keep telling me I need another car, but I love my car. Anyway, I've been having a problem with the air conditioning on it for like 2 years. And I have a good mechanic. I think he's good. He's honest. I trust him. But they can't seem to get it right because they had to change. I've got all of my paperwork here. They were not unable to find the faulty air conditioning control head assembly. The HVAC system was stuck on defrost and floor. Bypassed the vacuum system of the control head assembly to switch HVAC system to full center vent.
Okay.
Well, now I'm getting some air, not real cold air, out of the bottom vent, but I'm not getting anything out of the dash vent. Okay. They're telling me that they're unable to get the correct part for it because they're no longer making them. They're unavailable, you know, the parts from Ford.
Right.
So they're having to go to aftermarket, and they advise me, you know, aftermarket parts are not always good.
That's a lie. Wait, that's a lie, but continue on.
Oh, okay. And so I don't want to give my car up, but I'm not happy with driving around not having good air. My
okay.
air is like, you know, somewhat, but
okay.
it's not good
okay.
air.
Okay, okay. So you got the technician that you really like, and I appreciate that you really like him, and he modifies your head to accomplish a goal, and he says he does it with vacuum, and I understand completely what he's doing. I understand that
okay.
he's unplugging this vacuum hose and putting a plug in it, and then he's taking this vacuum hose and moving it over here, and what he's trying to do is get it all out of the center vents regardless of what the controls say, because the controls say top, middle, and bottom. Dashboard, middle, center vents, and bottom at my feet. So now he says that we got a problem that he's not owning up to, that he caused the problem, which is likely, but not 100% sure. And he says he can't find a control head. I hear this, I can't find a part all the time. And you know what else? Is the fact of the matter is that we find parts all the time. And I have two full-time parts guys. And they've been around in the business a long time, but they don't have any problem finding parts. We've not said, well, can't fix your car because we can't find a part. So what I can do is send me an email. Do you have email?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com.
Mark@Salem.com?
No, Mark Salem. MarkSalem.com.
Oh,
okay?
Okay.
And you're going to give me the VIN number of your car. It's on your registration. It's a 17-digit
I've got
number.
It right here.
Okay.
I've got it right here.
Okay, and then you're going to give me the year, make, and model. And
okay.
And then I might ask you a couple of questions down the road, but I'll find a head for you. Now, here's the bad news. You and I are going to get a head. And you're going to tell him to put it on, and there's a small possibility that he says the head didn't fix it. So we're working off of his diagnosis, and you might spend $100 or more for this head. And then all of a sudden he says, well, the head didn't fix it. What he's saying is I don't know how to fix it. I already boogered it up the first time, and I can't unbooger it up now. So you
well,
got it.
Can you give me the name of a mechanic? Out in the northwest area, Sun City area, that I could take it to?
Well, I can't go out that far, but I'll tell you that I would send you to Harker's Automotive at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I would just say to them, I'm not happy with where the air is blowing. I'm not happy with its temperature. Don't tell them anything about the first guy. Just give them
okay.
the symptoms you got now and say, call me with an estimate. That's what I would do.
So just go to Harker's right initially instead of emailing you. Go to Harker's.
Well, you can send me the information and I'll still find a head for you. But this possibility
okay.
is only 50-50 that it needs a head, and I don't want you to buy a head, and I don't want to order one myself, and I don't want to own one myself on somebody else's diagnosis. So I'm happy you opened that door to say I'll go someplace else. I want to
okay.
tell you something. If my guys did that, and if we modified the air conditioning automatic temperature control, I would just lose my mind. If we can't fix it, just say you can't fix it. If you can't fix it, send it to somebody who's more qualified than you are. The fact of the matter is I would just flip out. If you had a problem with a tire or a vibration, and all they did was put a bunch of weights on the tire, and the tire has an egg on it, and the tire is defective, and they're going to counterbalance the tire with a bunch of weights, that's just not right. So
that's kind of gerrymandering it. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, that's a nice word. Anyway, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark@marksalem like the cigarette .com, and I have a K in my name, MARK, and send me the VIN number and year, make, and model, and I'm pretty sure our parts guys can find a head, but we're not going to buy it yet. We're just going to make sure it's available, and then you take it to Harker's and let's see what happens. Okay.
Do I have to make an appointment with Harker's?
Yes.
Call and make an appointment with
Yes, you will. You'll talk to Ellen, and she is Bob's wife, and she can make she can make the world spin for you, okay?
And that is H-A-R-K-E-R-S, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right, well, you know, I will give them a call. If they can get my air working, I'd be a happy camper.
Okay, I can tell you they can. But without all the variables, this is what it takes, this is what's going to cost, and it's going to work right, and it's going to blow cold air when you ask for cold air, and it's going to give you hot air when you ask for hot air. Okay, that's what I want. I got to run, but anyway, thank you very much, Dan, Sharon, and Cole. I only have a minute and a half. Wait a minute, do I have a minute and a half?
You got roughly a minute and a half.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and take Dan, but Sharon and Cole, stay right there. Dan, how can I help you?
I got a Honda Civic 2012, and the other day when it was really incredibly hot, I was driving. Driving just fine. I stopped at a store for like, and the engine fired and then quit, and then I couldn't get it to run. I mean, it had plenty of battery. It was cranking the engine over, but I just couldn't get the thing to fire up, and it took like 2.5 hours to get a tow truck. And about every 15, 20 minutes, I'd try it again, and it wouldn't go. Again, it was incredibly hot, like, you know, 1, 2 in the afternoon. And then after about 2 hours, it fired up.
Okay.
And I drove it to...
Okay. Let me touch base with you real quick. When your car cranks over and doesn't start, it's because of the lack of fuel or the lack of spark. So if somebody would have taken one of those plug wires off and stuck, you know, something metal in it and held it close to metal, and you crank it over and there's no tick, 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 then we have a spark problem, crankshaft sensor, stuff like that. And I'll finish my thought, but I'm up against the clock right now. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go right back to Dan. And Dan, we talked about your 2012 Civic, and it died installed and wouldn't start. It would crank over, but it wouldn't catch. And as I was describing, it's either going to be your hot no start is no spark or no fuel, and it's more likely that it's no fuel based on the year of your car. So if you wanted to determine if it was, then carry a can of carburetor spray in your car, and when the engine dies and you crank it and it doesn't catch, open up the hood, and maybe your wife's there and she can take the driver's control. Open up the hood, take the air cleaner assembly off, and spray 1001, 1002, 1003 into the air intake. Into the air intake. That's the hose that goes to the mouth of the motor. And that's where the sucking is going on. And so have the wife hit the key and see if it starts for a second and dies. And if it starts for a second and dies, you have a fuel delivery problem. If it doesn't start, then you carry an old screwdriver with you, and you gently unplug one of the spark plug wires. You put the screwdriver in there. You hold it with the boot, and you put the screwdriver very close to a piece of metal, and you say, crank it over, honey, and it'll either go tick, 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 or it won't do anything. And if it doesn't do anything, you have an ignition problem. So I can't tell whether it's fuel or ignition, but I can tell you most garages with gray-haired guys, if they could get it to happen, it'll take them about 20 or 30 seconds to determine whether the fuel pump, the fuel pressure regulator, or the relay's bad, or whether it's an issue with spark. So that's all I have to offer
you.
Okay?
Yeah, that's the thing. They couldn't duplicate it. So I got the car back, and it runs now. But you say I can't really determine anything until it happens again.
Yeah, unless, I mean, I would never suggest to you, oh, let's put a fuel pump in it, let's put a new relay in it, and let's go and put an ignition module in it, which is $400 or $500. And I'm pretty sure I got it by then. You would say no. So, I mean, do you have towing on your car?
I do.
Okay. So if that's the case, but like I said, a cat and carburetor spray and an old screwdriver, and if your wife loves you, she'll turn the key and crank the motor over when you say, as opposed to when the wire's in your hand and she says, I'm going to get that SOB right now. She hits the key, you get sparked, you pee your pants, and you're mad. So it's that easy, okay?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was kind of hoping you'd say, yeah, when it gets hot, Hondas are known for this, just replace that, but apparently not.
I never say that because it bites you more than you're a hero. There are lots of pattern failures for all kinds of cars, but I've been doing this since 1972. I've owned my own shop since 1979. And frankly, we started doing that, and man, that I can't tell you how many times we ate that job. And so we just don't do it anymore. We explain the difference. And a lot of times, like for the older ladies, we'll run an air hose into the cab of the car, and then we'll give them a can of carb spray with a straw on it, and we teach them how to psst and hold a rag around it, psst, and we teach them how to do that. And then when it starts and runs, then you take that vacuum line and we give them a golf tee, and they put a golf tee in there. So we do train them to do this.
That's a good idea.
So that you can do that. I just described it perfectly for you, so you can do that if that's what you want. Put a golf tee in it, otherwise it'll idle roughly, and then when it dies, you stick that carburetor straw in there, count to 5 or 10, and then put your thumb over the end of it and see if it'll start. And if it starts up and runs for 3 or 4 minutes or 3 or 4 seconds and then it dies, we're done. It's fuel pump or fuel pump relay. And you're going to do both of them at the same time anyway. So if the fuel pump relay is bad, it's because the pump drew too much amperage and wiped out the relay. So we're going to do the pump and the relay at the same time. Okay, got to run, Dan. Thank you very much. Good luck to you, Sharon. Thank you for holding as long as you did. You have my full attention.
Okay, on the subject of the oil, you said that the synthetic oil doesn't need to be changed until like 10,000 miles?
10 to 15, yes, ma'am.
Okay, 2 years.
What, and you're saying that would be 2 years for you?
2 years.
Okay.
Well, we drive about 6,000 or 7,000 miles a year.
Okay, there's no problem with that. Do you ever take the car for kind of a longer drive? Do you ever drive from Mesa to Peoria? Do you ever drive from South Phoenix to Metro Center?
Yes.
Okay. See, during those times, the oil's going to go through a heat cycle. It's going to start cold. You're going to bring it up to 200, 210 degrees, and then you're going to shut it off, and it's going to cool off. So I like that. So I don't really care about that. I don't care about your miles and stuff like that. But how many miles has your car got on it?
It's just hit 100,000.
Okay, and I want you to know that I'm using a synthetic in my truck. It's a diesel truck. It's a one-ton truck. And I haul fat cows and fat horses around all the time. Not fat wives, but just cows and horses, okay? and I've got, I think it's 170 or 180,000 miles on it. And I do take care of it. I'm running a synthetic, and I'm changing it every 15,000 miles.
Wow.
And so I practice what I preach.
How do I know what kind of oil is in it now?
You don't, and the motor doesn't care, and nobody else does either.
And so I can switch from one type to another? Just
in a heartbeat, because there's nothing in your car that's going to know you did that. There's no little gremlin that's sitting there going, hey, you can't put that oil in here. There's no such thing.
I thought there were unicorns in.
You could stick carrots in your fuel tank, and as long as they would emit some gas, you could run on them. But no, there is nothing in your car that you need to worry about. You can put the cheapest gas, or you can fill it with super. You can put the best oil, or you can put the worst oil. It's never going to know. And so another thing is spark plugs. You can enhance the spark plugs, and you can go from 8,000 miles to 15,000 miles, but it's going to cost you twice as much for the spark plugs. So you get twice the wear, but you're going to pay twice the price. So those are the issues. But Sharon, I got to run, but thank you very much for holding as long as you did. We have 5 open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We already talked about Harker's Automotive at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Let's go to the other side of the valley real quick and talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, they've been open. Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, own the shop. Brian was born in a gas station family, and so was Thelma. It's the only shop in Mesa that I can put my name behind. I know they're honest. I know they're dependable. They've been around a very long time. They know how to fix cars. They're not going to guess, and they do all the stuff right. So if you're in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair is not a bad place to go if you don't already have a great place. Dave, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. Thanks for taking my call. Okay. My question is regarding a 2015 Tundra that I had a supercharger, the TRD supercharger, of 500 miles after I took delivery of the vehicle. I've got maybe 75,000 on it right now. I get deer in the headlight look when I ask them what sort of preventive maintenance or what sort of maintenance do I need to do for my supercharger. Can you help me?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. Nothing.
Fluid change?
No. It doesn't share the oil from the engine?
No, it does not. It has a separate reservoir that you put the oil in, okay. And then it goes to a little intercooler, and it circulates back through just the supercharger system.
And that's new to me, but if that's the case, how many ounces of oil does this have?
That I don't know, because I'm having a hard time trying to figure that out, but if I were to guess, I would say a couple of quarts anyway.
Huh. I've never seen anything like that. Okay, let's just assume you're right. Now, the supercharger, what you're going to be lubing is the shaft. And so that's where the oil's going to go to keep the shaft moving. And that's, you know, we're obviously inhaling some air, and then we're packing it into the cylinders. So
yes.
I would use a synthetic. I'd use a 530. I'd change the oil and be done with it. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Now, I have quite a few supercharged cars. My Camaro shares the engine oil, and it doesn't have an individual reservoir. We use synthetic in the Camaro. It's a 2010 with like 30,000 miles on it. It's one of those cars, just like your Tundra, that will almost lift the front tires off the ground. If my wife's driving it, I must clarify about that, if my wife's driving it. So, and for the rest of the people, supercharger is this. When your engine is breathing, it goes like this. Sucks air in, and then it blows air out at the exhaust. So it's suck, push, suck, push. Now, the whole idea of the supercharger is when you suck the air in, I'm going to put an air hose in your mouth, and when you start sucking, I'm going to pump about 10 pounds of air pressure into your lungs that's going to quickly blow your lungs up. But I'm just using that as an example. So instead of just sucking air in, we're going to push air in, and that adds a lot more power. It adds a lot more temperature, and now all of a sudden we have a big squirt of fuel and a whole bunch of air, and boom, when the spark plug goes off, his Tundra is going to probably outrun everybody else. So that's what a supercharger is. It just supercharges the air, and he's probably got the supercharger where it's gulping cold air, so it goes through the supercharger. It's going to gain a little bit of heat, and then it's going to go into the engine. So that's what I would use. I use a 530 synthetic. Okay?
How often would you?
If you've only got 3 or 4 ounces, I'd probably do it every 2 years. But if it's no big deal, then why not just do it every year in January, like I do on some of my cars?
Thank you, sir.
Okay, good luck to you. Thank you, Greg. You're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, I just wanted to give you a heads up. About 2 months ago, I called you about changing the oil on my Sprinter van.
Okay.
And you sent me over to Goody's, and they informed me that they don't do work on Sprinter vans.
Okay.
So they did send me to a European service over in Scottsdale.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they were great. So,
you can say their name if they were great. If you're going to badmouth them, I don't want you to say their name. But if you were really happy with their service, they did what they say, tell us who it is.
It was European Services in Scottsdale.
Okay. So the European Services did a good job on your first visit. They didn't try to sell you the whole farm and tell you you needed all these fluid changes and you need this and you need this. You took it in. They asked you about symptoms, and when you got it, the symptoms were gone and they were within their estimate. 10-4?
Well, this is just a standard oil change on a Mercedes Sprinter, and it was about a third of the cost that Mercedes wanted. And
okay.
Goody's and this European Services and Scottsdale work together. And
yes, they do.
They do.
They work together, and they don't badmouth one another, and they're very good friends. But there's some models. There's some models of Chevrolet I don't want to work on, but I do the rest of them. So I do 95% of Chevrolet, 95% of the Fords. The Nissans, there's a couple I don't want to work on because I'm not going to look good. It's going to be one of those cars that is just tough to fix. So on Thursday afternoon, my car farts and dies, and I don't want to be the one that tracks that down.
Okay.
So,
well, basically, I just wanted to thank you.
Okay.
I got to the right place anyway.
That,
they did an awesome job.
And if they did a good job and they beat the dealership, then I would suggest that you spend a minute on the internet and go in and give them a really nice rating. You don't have to beat up anybody else, but just give them a nice rating. And we, all of us business owners, we watch that and we appreciate that. And most of us will put a tickler in your file saying the last time he was in, he left a really nice. And what happens is when the service writer sees that, he knows he's not going to make you mad. And so we're going to play it by the way we should. So, all righty. Well, listen, thank you very much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you have a car question. And we're going to do this for another hour. So we do our show from 10 to 12. And so we're going to go from 11 to 12 here in another 10 minutes. But you got time to call in, 602-508-0960. And, Gil, we don't have anybody in queue?
No, the lines are open.
Okay. With car repair today, we've talked about this so many times, but I just want to make sure. If you get a laundry list of things to do from a repair shop that you took your car in for an oil change or a set of windshield wipers, if you get that laundry list, you make them write it down. And then you tell them, my husband or my dad, whatever you want to tell him, he's going to want to look at this, but he might have a question for you. So would you just write your name and your phone number on this piece of paper? I want to tell you something. If they won't do that, it's because they're not going to stand behind what came out of their mouth. Otherwise, everybody writes that down. Everybody has little old ladies who want their son who lives in Oregon to look at what they need in the car. That's okay. We'll do that 100 times over again. But if you run into the shop that doesn't want to do that, that wants to tell you something but not write it down, you need to be very suspicious of their ethics. Because they don't know if you're with the Attorney General's office. They don't know if you're with some crime fighting group from the city of Phoenix or the state of Arizona. They don't know. So if they're not going to write anything down, it always means it isn't true. It always means that. Because if it was true, all of us, we write it down and staple our business card to it and then initial our business card. That's the way everybody that does a good job does that job. So you have to be careful. And then it's a good idea if you're going to use somebody new. Go in and look at their reviews. You're going to type in Mark Salem Reviews or Salem Boys Auto Reviews. And you can look at them. And hopefully everybody's going to have a bad one. We had one the other day that the lady, and actually she brought it in for her husband. So I think the husband was a problem. But she says that intermittently the wipers don't work. And so we checked the motor, we checked the linkage, we lubed up the motor and the linkage, we checked her wiper blades that they were aligned right, and we couldn't figure out what was the matter. And we charged her $25. And boy, she didn't write a nice review. And, you know, I told my daughter, Andy, why don't you just call her and tell her, take the review down and we'll give her money back. I think we charged her $22. And Andy says, oh, that's not going to make her happy. And I said, okay, fine. We'll live with the bad review. Hopefully people understand it, but and you have to take that with a grain of salt. The review should say they charged me, but they didn't fix my wiper blades. That's true, but the charge was try to find the problem with the wiper blades and provide some kind of service that involves we're going to lube the motor, we're going to make sure the motor's free, we're going to make sure that the linkage, because the motor has linkage that make both wipers flap, and so we're going to squirt a little white lube on each one of those and see if we can figure it out. We're also going to turn on the windshield wipers, and we're going to hit the top of the dash, not enough to break it, but just jar the dash, and if the wipers quit, then we have a bad connection at the switch. So us gray-haired guys know how to do that. 602-508-0960. I'll take it, Gil.
Say good morning to Denny.
Denny, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I have a couple of questions. I have a 2018 GMC... rather Chevy, I'm sorry, it's a Chevy 3500 truck, diesel
okay.
truck.
Okay.
And I was told recently that I wanted to replace the upper and lower hose on the radiator.
Okay.
And I was told that the lower hose is, or both hoses was $2,000.
How much dollars?
$2,000.
Well, you need to get the hell out of there.
That's what I thought. They said that it has tentacles coming off, going to many different places on the vehicle, the lower hose.
Okay. And $2,000, and so we got, if we're $100 an hour, it's going to take 20 hours to do this?
I know. Yeah. I know. That's a little ridiculous. I agree.
Okay, and you can get on the internet. You can do this yourself. You can get on the internet, go to rockauto.com, and they'll tell you about the lower hose, and they'll tell you all the all the things that are tied together, and you can buy the lower hose, and you can buy the arms of the lower hose, and you can buy clamps and all that kind of stuff. Then there's a lot of other ones that you can go in and you can put your VIN number in and say how much to replace the radiator. What's the labor to replace the radiator? And they'll tell you in hours. I'll tell you that most anybody that's worth their salt in Phoenix right now on the car repair side, and including your truck, is between $150 and $175 an hour. And it depends on how busy you are. If you're just up to your ears in alligators, your price is going to be high. If you're not up to your ears in alligators, you want to generate business, and you think that dropping the labor rate would be it, then you can do that. Those are business decisions. Now, how many miles has this car gone on at this 3,500?
37,000.
Okay. You're changing the hoses a little early. I mean...
I totally agree.
Okay.
I totally agree, but it's pressure from other people.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, I'll tell you this. If Dennis called me up and said, I'll take all five of your grandkids to Disneyland as long as you let me take my 2018 3500 GMC, I'd say, if you got enough seat belts, take them. That's what I'd say. So you got a lot of years, but you don't got a lot of miles. And I mean, if you're 18, that's 5 years and 37,000 miles. So what's that? 7,000, 8,000 miles a year?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's a lot of people that are going to want you to do this or that. I'm suggesting to you that if you go in there and you wait in the morning till you squeeze the upper hose, you squeeze the lower hose, you squeeze the heater hoses, you squeeze all the coolant hoses, I'm quite sure you're going to find that none of them are going to sound crackly when you push on them. You'll be able to feel an old hose. It'll oftentimes crackle for you. So I think you're going to find each and every one of them, you can squeeze them. They're soft. They're pliable. I know that I'm going to get a lot of flack by the guys are going to go, well, yeah, but 5 years, Mark, if he did 12,000 miles a year, he'd be 60,000 miles. And I'd say, 65,000 miles is too early. Mark does his hoses when they're about 7 years old or when we're approaching 75,000 miles. It's between 75 and 100. I got 170,000 miles on my Dodge one ton. And I changed the hoses not too long ago, and the ones that we took off were just fine. As a matter of fact, I took the upper and lower, and I put them in the toolbox in case I get stuck in Wilcox, Arizona on a Sunday morning. I can put them on myself. So I think you do a little internet research, and you'll get the question answered, but I'm a little uncomfortable with the time and the miles.
And because there was a dealer, I brought it to the dealer, and the dealer said that it would be, well, I think one other thing on it, which I can't recall right now, but it would be around $3,500 or $3,600 was the exact price.
To do all the hoses.
What the other item was, I don't recall.
Okay, but that's do all the hoses, right? Right?
Yes.
Okay, okay. I can live with $3,500. He's got two and a half gallons of coolant. He's got a whole bunch of clamps. He's got a whole bunch of hoses. He's got a whole bunch of labor, and he's got a flush of the radiator and a flush of the engine. I can live with the 3,500, but you only have 37,000 on it. So I'd be a lot happier if you'd wait to 50,000 and then go ahead and spend the big bucks. But anyway, I got to run. The lines are wide open for everybody else. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Gil's answering the phone, and he just told me everything's empty, so you're welcome to call in, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to come back for another hour of fun and frivolity as long as somebody calls in. And so we'll be back in a minute. There's a place in North Phoenix called Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, and they're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and they do lots of diesel work, and you're always welcome to stop by there. But Nate is well known in our industry. He's the go-to guy if you've got a diesel problem and you need some help and you've got good symptoms and good data. He'll help you as a shop owner, but he's not going to let people call him and take up a bunch of his time. And you can't give him the information that we would otherwise give him. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. And Nate, if you got a 6.6 Chevrolet, if you got the 6.7 Dodge, if you got the 6.7 Ford, or any of the older models, the 5.9 Dodge and stuff, then Nate can help you with those anytime you want. Let's go to the phone. Scott, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hi there, Mark. I bought a 79 Bronco with the intention of restoring it. It's in okay shape, but, you know, it needs some help. It hasn't been in an accident. It doesn't look like there's any rust on it. We threw it up on the rack. But, you know, I guess I'm wanting to paint it, and I probably shouldn't have bought a brown one because I ultimately want it to be either black or silver, and they paint the insides of these things, you know, the same color as the outside, and it looks like a metal interior. So I'm hoping whatever auto body shop I bring, paint the inside of it too. And it, you know, I'm not looking for it to be like a Barrett Jackson quality, you know, decent paint job that's going to last a long time, but it doesn't have to be great. So just wondering if there's a body shop that you know of in the Valley that would want to work on something like that. I'm finding a lot of people are just backed up and don't want to work on it. So...
Yeah.
Just wondering if you know of a good shop in the Valley.
Well, there's going to be people that hear that you want the inside and outside painted and recognize they're going to be embarrassed to give you a number for that. Now, if you were to say, I'm going to gut the interior myself, I'm taking the door panels off, I'm going to take the dash pad off, I'm only going to have one seat in the whole thing, pull the carpeting out of it, I want you to undercoat the floors underneath the carpeting and paint the inside and the outside, I'm going to take the headlights out of it and the bezels out of it and all that kind of stuff, that would probably get their attention a little bit more. On the other hand...
Less labor.
Yeah. On the other hand, if you don't want to do that or can't do that... Then you tell them, give me a price, and I want you to know that what do you think this will take? Will it take a month? Will it take 2 months? And once you give me that number, I'm gonna live with it. So I understand that this might be something that you do some other work with insurance companies who demand instantaneous service, and so mine's going to be filling in the back. But I don't have a guy to tell you that. Do you do business with a mechanical shop today?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Okay. You ask them, who in the neighborhood would you have, if you own this Bronco, to do an exterior and interior paint? Don't worry about the color change, because they're gonna sand it before they spray it anyway, and they're not going to take all the paint off of it, but they're going to rough it up. And chances of you having a nick or something, and let's say you painted it black and the underside be brown, are slim and none. So I wouldn't worry about that. But it would be obviously cheaper if you kept either the interior color or the exterior cover. It would be a lot cheaper, okay?
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, thanks for the help.
Oh, you betcha. In and out paint job, I will always make my notes on each. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you, Steve?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I have a 2011 Jeep Wrangler Sahara Unlimited. The four-door Jeep Wrangler with the 3.8-liter V6. A month ago, I had the check engine light come on. I have an extended warranty through one of the dealers. So I took it back to the dealer. They diagnosed it. I had a bad passenger side head gasket, and the codes that the check engine light deemed were number 6 cylinder misfire, a bad Bank 1 catalytic converter.
Okay.
The dealer did all the mechanical work, head gasket, extended, everything with the extended warranty. The dealer just went fine, get the vehicle back. They did multiple test drives, but within 75 miles of me leaving the dealer and heading back up to Cave Creek, guess what illuminated before I got home?
Okay.
The check engine light. Went back to the dealer, another diagnosing, which still deemed Bank 1 passenger side catalytic converter.
Okay.
Which was diagnosed the first time, but I was told, and, you know, I kind of cocked my head and not sure if Grandpa Salem or Grandpa Hanky would buy this story, but Steve, you had a bad head gasket, coolant getting into the exhaust system, coolant getting in, which is foreign material to the catalytic converter.
Okay, we got to get to the end of this, because none of you're saying stuff there that I want to argue with right off the bat. So let's just get where are we at today.
I'm told I have a bad catalytic converter, and that I should go to any of the parts stores, get the catalytic converter, fill up the tank with 91 octane, and drive it 70 miles an hour on the freeway to clean out the exhaust system and the catalytic converter. That should solve my problem 85% of the time, or you may have to put a new passenger side catalytic converter on.
Okay. Okay. That's a stupid idea. We took a long time to get there, but that's a stupid idea. The catalyst is not processing. It's got sensors in front and in back. And so the computer has to see differences. So it probably got some heavy-duty load on the front, which is fuel, but on the backside, the fuel is virtually nothing. So this idea of filling the exhaust with some kind of liquid or lacquer and all this carburetor spray, we've heard that. But here's the real question. They covered the defect under warranty, you said. Yes or no?
Yes, but the catalytic converter wasn't part of the extended warranty.
Okay. The catalytic converter is a victim of the head gasket. So you've got to fight with your aftermarket insurance company, because if there would have been an exhaust manifold that was bent as a result of the head gasket feeding a cylinder water, the cylinder then pumps the water into the metal exhaust manifold and causes the manifold to crack, just like a hot light bulb under a cold faucet is going to cause the light bulb to explode, then that's the real question. This is a victim of the water leak that I had on the head gasket. Now, the only other thing you could do is hot rod that thing up to Flagstaff and back one time to see if you can just clean it up. But as far as using lacquer or carburetor spray or something like that, you're not going to do it. If they're not going to cover it, call Mesa Muffler and find out what they're going to charge you to replace the catalytic converter. But they're going to test it first. And here's the deal. We got a pressure. I don't know about your truck or not, but sometimes we have a pressure sensor on the front and a pressure sensor on the back. Well, if the pressure... the front one's showing 5, the back one better be showing 5. But if the front one shows 5, and I'm using stupid numbers here, and the back one shows 20, it shows you the catalytic converter's plugged up. In addition to that, the catalytic converter may need to just be ran hard. And that's why I say take it up to Cave Creek. Take it on the freeway on Sunday morning. Put it in third gear instead of overdrive. Bring the RPMs up and get that son of a gun hot. Then stop by, pull the negative cable on it, clear the codes, and drive it and see what happens. But those are the in-betweens that you can do. But I'm kind of disappointed in your aftermarket warranty company, because they know damn well that you shoving a bunch of water into the catalytic converter probably caused the problem. But they're not going to cover it. So that's the best I can offer you.
The other thing, just real quick, when I changed the Bank One passenger side, do I need to do anything for the driver's side, considering the vehicle has over 140,000 miles on it?
The driver's side what? The driver's side cat?
Yes, sir.
Okay. No, you're not going to replace the cat until you have to have a reason. So there's no preventative maintenance. The question you should have asked is, Mark, do you ever replace catalytic converters if they're out of mileage spec, or they're too old, or Grandma Moses drives? And the answer is hell no. The catalytic converter will let us know. But no, your car's not going to love you anymore if you change the catalytic converter every 50,000 miles. And like I said, we got cars in our fleet right now that have well over 150,000. These are gasoline cars that have well over 150,000 miles, and we're not having cat problems. But they're also not driving to the liquor store and back 5 days a week at 20 miles an hour. You can see the difference between that. Anyway, good to run, Steve, but thank you very much. Keith, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2016 Hyundai Sonata, and I was driving up the 202 a couple weeks back, and it lost power, and turns out it was a recall, 1962. So I brought it into the dealer, and, you know, this is a, they're aware of this issue, but anyway, it requires an engine replace, and Hyundai Corporation is going to replace my engine for free.
Okay.
Okay, I'm thrilled. Then they come back to me, the dealer says, I've got to pay for all the new hoses and new engine mounts, and it comes to about $2,500. I don't know if I should be paying that or not.
Well, I'd certainly do the engine mounts. That's for sure. How many miles has it got on it now?
190,000. I used to drive Uber full time, so okay. Yeah.
And are those the original hoses?
Probably, yes.
Okay, then I would take the whole deal. 190,000 miles is 8 times around the equator. You should have done these hoses a hell of a long time ago. Long time. So change the question. Mark, when do you change hoses in your wife's car? Well, first of all, Mark, do you love your wife? Yes, I do. We've been married almost 50 years. So when do you change the hoses on hers? We're doing hoses right around 80,000 miles on our customer cars, on our own cars. Why do you do that? Because every car that gets towed in with a blown hose is north of the 80,000-mile mark. The motor mounts are insignificant. Yeah, let's put them in because the labor's a little intensive to do that. But as far as the rest of the hoses, you have to say this. I'll pay for the hoses, but for you to replace the engine, you got to take both ends of the hose off. So I'll pay for the hoses, but I don't think there should be any additional labor because you got to take it off the radiator neck and you got to take it off the thermostat housing to put the new engine in. Then you hook the same hose to the radiator neck and to the thermostat housing. So if we can work that out, then I would like that.
Well, I think the hoses came to like $1,700, and he was telling me that was just parts, and that's like that seems like an awful lot.
Oh, I mean at first blush, I mean. I don't know. Did they kiss you before you left? You know what I do? This is the sneaky thing, okay?
No.
Listen. Call another dealer and tell them the same story about an independent repair shop. Get the person's name. Maybe ask for the service manager or whatever. And give them roundabout, hey, motor's got this. And they say that they have to replace the whole motor. And I took it to this shop. And they say they want to do all the hoses. And the hoses are 17. And the end of the day, it's going to be 22. And da, 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 da. And what do you think about that? And see if they'll take the chance to just poop all over an independent shop, not knowing they're talking about another dealer.
Right.
So
that's sneaky. I like it.
Yeah. What the heck you got to lose? And at that particular point, you can you'll have two different numbers, and you can decide what suits you the best. But the $1,700 worth of hoses, if there's 8 hoses on there, let me get my calculator. If we got $1,700. Let me turn it on. Come on, $1,700 divided by, let's just say, 30 hoses, heater hoses and all that kind of stuff. That's $510 a hose, or $51 a hose. Is that right? Yeah, plus labor.
Yeah.
Plus labor.
Yeah.
So, and you also said it had 190,000 miles on it. If you haven't done hoses, then you're due. I don't think you have a choice, but I think you should shop it.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
All right.
Good luck.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Right, thanks a bunch for the help. Appreciate it.
You betcha, Greg. You bet, Keith. I have open lines. I have 5 of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And real quick before I bail out of this segment, Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 and Bell Road, I should say. I want to tell you something. All the shops I talk about, I know the owners, I know their staff, I know their wives, and I want to tell you, Kurt's is in the top of the group. He's just in the top of the group. I'm going to say that everybody's in the top or in the second stage, but I'm telling you, when you talk about somebody who's good at diagnosis, who's fair on their pricing, who knows what they're doing, who only bids work you need and all that kind of jazz, Kurtz is the king. There's other guys, but Kurtz is the king in that area. So Kurtz Automotive, and he's at I-17 in Bell. He's a great guy, and if you live in that area and you don't have a shop, I think you ought to stop there. We'll be back.
Uh-huh.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I'm going to tell you a personal story, and then I'm going to talk to Robert. Up here in Payson, we have a big glass wall that faces south, and we've had hummingbirds since we moved here 12 years ago, and it's a place where I ranch. And the hummingbirds are, my wife feeds them this sugar water, and so there can be five or six of them on this loop drinking the water, and we have four or five of those containers. So about a week ago, when all the kids are up here and all the grandkids, we hear this, something hit the window, and I know automatically it's a hummingbird. So I don't say anything. I go outside. I pick up the hummingbird. I give it a squeeze like you would if somebody drowned it or something. So I squeeze his little chest, and then I go over in the dog's dishes there, and I just in and out of the water. Then I set him on the table. They're all laughing at me. They're calling me the hummingbird whisperer. And then somebody goes out about an hour later, and they go, "You're not going to believe this, but the hummingbird's gone." Since then, I have saved, I don't know, 10 hummingbirds. So they hit the window. You hear them hit the window. You go out, stick them in some water, squeeze their little chest for, you know, it's the same as pushing on a human's chest. And so if you have any hummingbird questions, you can call me too. Robert, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have an 05 Nissan Frontier with the V6, and when I'm driving, my oil gauge is centered. When I come to a stop, it drops down to the very bottom mark.
Okay, okay.
And it hasn't done that before.
Okay, that's kind of easy. You didn't say anything about the engine clattering. You didn't say anything about oil consumption.
No engine noise.
Okay. You didn't say anything about an oil leak. You didn't say anything about all of that. So it's got an oil pressure switch that you need to replace. That's it.
An oil pressure switch.
Yeah.
And where is that located?
It's going to be somewhere on the side of the engine, and it may be difficult to get. And more than likely, you're going to need a special socket because the flange on it is not your normal 8, you know, flat sides and stuff like that. Yeah, this is not a bad deal. No matter what's going on in your engine, you didn't say it. It didn't clatter. It's not using oil. It's not leaking oil. All you've got is an erratic gauge. And 99 times out of 100, the oil pressure switch needs to be replaced. Now, another thing you could do is just call a couple of shops and just tell them, "I've got an 05 Frontier V6, and I have an oil pressure issue on my dashboard." And I talked to my brother in St. Louis, and he's a mechanic, and he said, "All I need is an oil pressure switch, so how much would it cost to have you do it? And I'll accept responsibility for the success or no success." So if it doesn't work,
okay.
I'm not going to ask you for a discount or ask for my money back. I'm going to pay you to replace the oil pressure switch. And I think your percentage of odds is 99-1. So 99 times I'm going to replace the oil pressure. And to be honest with you, I'm going to put the oil pressure in, and I'm not going to, when you take the oil pressure out, you can screw a gauge in. Then you go, "Okay, Fred, start the car," and you look at the gauge, and then maybe you bring the gauge out of the hood and you tape it to the windshield and you go drive it. I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to pull the switch out, put a new switch in, because I'm going to be able to give you back $30, $40, whatever the heck it is, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that, knowing full well that you've got, how many miles are on that Frontier?
Oh, about 130.
Okay. So it's been around the world five times. So, yeah, oil pressure switch, and I'll bet you a dollar against your dollar that I'm right.
All right. Well, thank you.
All righty. Good luck to you, Robert. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, have we got anybody in queue?
No, lines are open.
Okay, lines are wide open, so we've got time. You know, working on cars is pretty satisfying because sometimes you have to track some problem down, and the customer's so ecstatic that you have to do that, or that you found it. You know, you found it. But there's been a lot of times. I've been working on cars since 1972, and I owned my first shop in 1979. There's been times where the symptoms really led us to this mailbox, but in reality, we should have gone to this mailbox. And in the early stages of my life, our boss said it's our fault. And now that I'm older, smarter, I agree with him. We didn't ask enough questions. We didn't ask him the noise. Is it cold or hot? Does it come from the hood, the right side, the left side? If you and your wife switch seats, does your wife say, oh, no, it's much better on this side than it is on the passenger side, and do you agree with her? So if you do those kinds of easy stuff, it always saves you money. Now, it's also important that you know we're all going to overbid our work, because we don't know what we're going to get into. If we do a thermostat housing, we're probably going to have the thermostat housing. Or if we do a thermostat, we're probably going to have the thermostat housing in our estimate anyway. Because if it comes off and the bottom of it is all corroded and we know that we're going to have to stack two gaskets and a whole bunch of silicone on it, I've already got the thermostat housing in my estimate. I don't have to call back. If I don't use the thermostat housing, then I'm going to come in a little lower than my estimate. And what the heck is wrong with that? How many of you go into your repair shop and come out with a bill that's less than their estimate? Well, I want to tell you something. There's quite a few shops in this town that do that. I am one of them. Our staff has to overbid it. Now, every once in a while, a customer will say, well, you know, I got an estimate for $410 and you guys are at $460. And we're going to tell them we got some fluff built into ours. We just do. We don't want to have to call you back. And there's a bunch of other guys that do the same thing. Plus, think about this. Every time you come in, the bill's less than we quoted you. And so one day you come in and you go, you know, you said it's going to cost me $160 to do it, but he said it's going to cost, you know, $140. And then we say, well, let's look at your customer history. Last year alone, we came in under our estimate by $210, and we never exceeded our estimate. So we have lots of stuff in the estimate, so I don't have to call you back. But I think if you look at your tickets, you'll find that we always come in less. So if you want to use the other shop, that's fine, but I'd like to draw your attention that we've come in cheap and we've bid things a little high, but we come in less than that 99% of the time. There's a lot of us that are doing that now. It really pays a lot of benefits because our customers say to other people, he's never a dollar over his estimate. And we don't mind that. The sin is overestimate and then keep the money. That's the sin. You're going to add a thermostat housing on there. You're going to add an upper hose with two clamps. You're going to add a gallon of coolant to something that you're going to do, but you don't know if you're going to need all that. And so if you do that, you're okay. But if you don't do that, the bill's coming down. Or you lie and say you did do it, and smart people are going to have somebody look at the hoses and say, is that a brand new hose? I want to tell you something. You grandmothers can look at an old hose and a new hose, and every single one of you will be able to point out the new hose. Every single one of you will be able to point out the new starter, the new alternator, the new thermostat, the new radiator, the new ball joint, the bushings in the front end. Everybody knows that what's good and bad. So if you call me, I'll say, I'll order a new one, you bring your old one, and I'll put them in my hands. That's how we do. But I'd prefer you not do that. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I have one caller in line. I have four open lines available. 602-508-0960. Got to do a little information for you. I want you to listen to the years that these guys have been in business. Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him for 100 years. He has master technicians. He knows what he's doing. So if you live near I-17 in Deer Valley, and you don't have a shop, then may I suggest Action Auto Repair. Been around since 1983. Automatic Transmission Exchange, Phil. Phil knows Barney Rubble. He's been around since 1968. Automotive Dynamics in Sun City, been around since 1982. Blackwell Automotive, been around, I don't have that. Kurtz Automotive, been around since 1987. And Harker's, 1967. These people have been in the repair business for how long? 30, 40, 50 years? So these guys know cars inside and out, and we all learn as we get new cars, fuel injection, electronic spark, cruise control, adjustable suspension and all that kind of stuff. So Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, great place. Automatic transmission exchange since 1968, 40th Street in Washington, the only transmission shop on my list. Automotive Dynamics, 82, and he's on the north side of Grand, west of 99th Avenue, and he's the only shop in Sun City that I stand up for. Blackwell Automotive, Tom is a great guy. He's just ornery as all hell, but he's at 40th Street in Greenway, and he's been in business for every bit of 30 years. So when you look at all these guys, I'm sending you places that have been around, they got gray hair, they know how to fix cars, and they're not afraid to say, I need another opinion on this. So that's what it's all about. Kevin, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah, hey, Mark. I've been listening to you for a long time, and this isn't really a repair question. I'm in the market for a new GMC Canyon, and I wanted to know your opinion of that 2.7-liter engine they're putting in those things nowadays.
I don't have anything bad to say about it. Tell me what the other options are.
That's it. That's my problem. They don't offer any. The 23 and the 24 model years are just going to offer this engine.
Okay. And how many years has the engine been out? Do you know how many years prior to this?
They tell me since 2000. They apparently have had this engine in the Silverados since then.
Okay.
And I just don't trust the salesman.
Well,
I thought I'd ask you.
I'm going to embarrass myself because I've just not heard of a 2.7. I'm sorry, that's just not on my hard drive. It's not in my memory or my hard drive. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. That
right.
just means that it's not been on my radar. It's not been a pattern failure. It's not complained about, the lack of power, all that kind of stuff. But you can go on the internet and ask, there's a variety of websites there that will give you historical data and maintenance data on new cars. But is it a V6 or a four-cylinder?
It's an inline four.
Okay. I want to tell you, the inline fours, and it's normally aspirated, so it doesn't have a turbocharger or supercharger on this, right?
No, it's turboed.
Oh, it is turboed. Okay, well, then I've changed my mind.
It's inline four turbo.
Okay. Anything turbocharged, and Nissan's a good truck, anything with a turbocharger, you're going to love. And there's no additional maintenance. The turbocharger, as long as you don't drive it like your grandma and you throttle it up every once in a while and blow some of the carbon out of it, you'll never deal with it for 100,000 miles. It shares the oil from the engine. And you got to drive it like you stole it every once in a while. But there's nothing wrong with that. So if it's a turbo, it's kind of small, but the 2.7 is going to be like a small V8 with that turbocharger on it. So I've changed my mind. I'm saying that would certainly be one of the things I'd look at.
You're okay with it, even if I'm towing a ski boat and some other things? And
well,
is the
ski boat exceed your towing capability?
No.
Okay. All right. It's very likely that this turbo engine is going to have an EGT gauge on it, exhaust gas temperature, and it's going to be a white,
right.
a green, and a red gauge. You need to know that the engine's going to start melting down at 1,100 degrees. Now, every supercharged car and every turbocharged I own, we pay attention to that. So if you're on your way to Saguaro Lake and all of a sudden you start tickling, 900 degrees, then maybe you pull it down a gear, you slow down a little bit, and you turn off the air conditioning, and all of a sudden that 800 drops to 600, 550, bingo. Get your foot out of the throttle and drive, drive as if you got a hot, full cup of coffee between your legs.
Okay.
But I want to tell you, everything I own's turbocharged. And I have a couple of supercharged cars that we built, old Camaros and stuff. So we don't have any problems with the turbocharger, but you're right. If I haul a four-horse trailer and I'm full of fuel and I got a bunch of stuff in the bed of the truck, when I come out of Payson and I start going up Mount Ord, I got to pay attention to the EGTs. And that means I'll just downshift one gear and I'll go up at 55 miles an hour instead of 75, which is everybody else is doing. So, and
right.
I know I got a trailer full of horses, and I know I got a trailer full of this, or a truck full of this, so I'm going to expect that, and I'm going to plan for that. So you don't want to melt the motor.
Okay.
But then the next question is, Mark, how often have you seen a motor melted down that's a turbocharger? And I say, we service thousands and thousands and thousands of cars a year, and we might see one every 2 years. And that, and when we see it, it's because the driver was flat out stupid, and we can see that everything's metal, that everything is melted, and we see this huge damage, and we know that they were just made a bad decision. So anyway, Kevin, I got to run, but thank you very much for your question, and I'm giving the thumbs up on a 2.7 turbo on a new Canyon. All right, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we have five open lines. So if you want to comment about something I said, if you want to ask me a question, now's the time, 602-508-0960. So if you live anywhere near 40th Street and Greenway, there's a good shop there called Blackwell Automotive. He doesn't really know a lot about cars, wink, wink. But you can say to him, listen, if you can't fix my car or you're having a tough time changing my oil, then you can call Mark Salem and he'll walk you through it. Tom and I are as all these shop owners are, we're the best of friends. But I can tickle Tom and he doesn't get mad at me. So I'm just telling you, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway, he's a good guy. He's busy like all the rest of us, so you're not going to stop by with a leaking water pump and at noon and figure that it's going to be done by 5, because none of us can pull that off right now. And all of us have gone to appointments just to control the load in our shops. So Blackwell's a good guy, 40th Street in Washington. He covers the northeast portion of Phoenix and Scottsdale, and he's a good guy. Let's go to the phone. Josh, good morning. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I'm having a hard time finding a is it a dust cover for that goes over a the torque converter in a 350 engine?
Yes, it's not really a dust cover. If you hadn't have said that, I know, but it's the pan with four bolts or two bolts that just cover up the torque converter and the flywheel.
Correct.
Okay.
I ordered one, but the bolt pattern on top was wrong, so I thought they were generic, but I need them closer together. I mean, and they're hard to find here in town.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
Is there any other place?
Get your pencil out.
Okay.
Okay, you're going to call A&S Transmissions. A&S, it stands for Alger Stowers. You're going to ask for Alger, A-L-G-E-R. And you're going to ask for the dust cover on the bottom of your 350 automatic transmission. And he probably has one in stock, or he's got an old one he'll sell you or something like that. And tell him that if he has one, then maybe send you a picture of it. Or you stop by and look at it. Now, if you're on the other side of town in Tempe, then I want you to call Lorenzo. And, gosh darn it. You're going to have to email me for Lorenzo's shop, because he does a lot of transmission work. Him and Alger are best of friends. And I just can't think of the name of his shop, because I just had this big brain, you know what. And so if you'll email me, mark@marksalem.com, Mark with a K, at Mark Salem, Salem like the cigarette, .com, then I'll give you the... But you can call Alger at A&S Transmissions and then say, what's Lorenzo's number? Because Alger will have that in
right,
his phone.
Right, okay, yeah. I might do that, yeah.
Yeah.
But, now, another quick question.
Okay.
I'm deciphering, I think it's probably a late 60s 350 tranny. Now, can I... A lot of people said don't try to flush that tranny out... We'll put the synthetic tranny fluid in there because it could cause a leak. What do you think about that?
If it had a leak now, it'll have a leak then, and if it doesn't have a leak now, then there's no reason for it to have a leak then. I don't know about the synthetic part, because synthetic just raises the fluid level, the burnt level of the fluid, into an area that transmission is not going to handle. So if the fluid turns to a tar on a synthetic at 500 degrees, your transmission's toast at 300. So synthetic's not going to help you any, because it's toast long before that. So you could use a different fluid. You could use a synthetic fluid. But if I were you, I'd just use a regular Dextron for your 350. And if you're going to flush it, then just flush it through the two lines at the cooler, push in, and then the other one's an exit. And we have machines that do that. And then afterwards, we pull the pan and change the filter and put it all back together. It's not going to be cheap, but it's going to be what you want, I think.
Okay, okay. Well, thank you very much for your answer, Mark.
All right.
Have a great day.
And you know,
thank you.
Have this brain, you know what I'm talking about, because I can't think of the name. Oh, I think it's a dust cover at the bottom of your 350 that sits on the transmission and keeps the lower portion of the torque converter and the flywheel from being seen from the ground up. There's a lot of guys that don't even put that on there. It's up to you. But Alger and Lorenzo, one of them will be able to help you. Okay?
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's not going to affect it if I leave it off, correct?
No, it won't. You're not four-wheeling, right?
No.
Okay. Okay, and your wife doesn't jump curbs when she's been drinking?
Not quite, no.
Okay.
Not just yet.
Okay, I'm just teasing you, of course. There's a lot of people that drive around without this dust cover on, and there's a lot of technicians that forget to put them on and blah, 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 blah. But the only thing that's going to happen is if you're out four-wheeling and if you dent the torque converter or if you break the flywheel, you're in trouble. And then you ask me, when was the last time I saw a torque converter damaged or a flywheel broken because they're out four-wheeling? And I say, I've never seen one in the last 10 years. So it's not that big of a deal. All righty?
Okay. Okay, right, Mark. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're right. I wish I could remember Lorenzo's name of his transmission shop, but Alger's way north, Lorenzo's in Tempe. Both of these guys are young guys, and between the two of them, they know 110% about transmissions. They do manual transmissions, they do automatic transmissions, they do import transmissions. Alger used to work for me in 1979. He worked for me when he was in high school. I'm going to tell you a quick story about Alger. Alger's this tall kid with kind of red hair, kind of quiet. And one day he says to me, "Mr. Salem, we're closed on Sunday, and I would like your permission to bring my car over. And I'm going to take the and he has a Camaro, and I'm going to take the automatic out of it, and I'm going to put a standard in it." And I said, "Wow!" I said, "If you put a standard transmission in it, what are you going to do about the clutch pedal? I'm going to install the clutch pedal underneath the dash. Have you got the right cross member? Yes, I do. Have you got cooler lines for it? Yes. Have you got a new radiator for it? Yes." "Oh, Alger, my fear is that I'm going to let you do this on Sunday because the shop is closed, but you're going to have the car apart, you're going to have it on a hoist, and you're going to be a third of the way through it, and we're going to want to work on using all the hoist, and you're going to hang one up." And he says, "Nope, that isn't going to happen. I am ready to make this swap." I said, "Alger, if you're there on Monday morning, I'm going to drop your car off the hoist, and I'm going to throw it in the dumpster. You got that?" He goes, "Yes." So Alger works all day, and actually this is Friday night, and he works all night Friday night. And he had changed it, but I had let him. So about noontime on Saturday, he's in front of my house laying rubber. And I am just amazed that this young high school kid took an automatic out, put a standard in, put the flywheel, put the bell housing, put the clutch in. He put the clutch pedal in. He made the shifter linkage. He cut a hole in this floorboard for the shifter, and he also has the right drive shaft. And I'm looking at something I've never seen before. And I say to him, "I am so proud of you. You have done something that I've never seen before." And now Alger owns his own transmission shop up on I-17. So he's still my favorite kid. And he still tells the story that I was mad at him because he couldn't be there the next day and that he was laying rubber in front of my house that afternoon. So I'm really proud of Alger, but Lorenzo is just as good as Alger, and I'm going to clear up his name of his shop next week. But we've got a caller. Who's that?
Say good morning to Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. That was a cool story. Fun to listen to.
Thank you.
So my son, he's 17, he bought a 92F 350 with a 460 in it.
Okay.
And against my advisement that he's not going to be able to afford the fuel to go in it, of course. But anyway, he loved it. and it has 200 and some odd thousand miles on it, and it's got me scratching my head. A couple weeks ago, he went to haul a horse trailer and made his haul, came back, was unhooking the trailer, and the overflow bottle started bubbling out, coolant in there, and so he asked me to look at it. I've done I'm not an actual total expert, but I've done my fair share of work on stuff and figured most stuff out. But anyway, checked some things here and there. And long story short, we've replaced a couple things. At an idle, it will slowly heat up, and checking the thermostat housing, and it will slowly keep raising the water level in the overflow tank, and it's bubbling with it, which, of course, with bubbles coming up. If you bring it up to a high idle, say 1,200, 1,300 RPM, and at that same time at an idle, the temperature is slowly increasing. When you bring it up to a higher idle, 1,200, 1,300 RPM, the water level will drop a little bit, and the bubbles eventually go away.
Okay. Well, stop right there. Stop. The radiator cap's bad.
The new radiator cap.
Yeah.
The second cap.
Yeah. That your symptoms are exactly what you said, that there was bubbles, and you said that it was peeing backwards and the overflow and blah blah blah. Do this: take the radiator cap off, take it to a local auto parts store, and ask them if they have the pump to test it. They look at it; it's a 14-pound cap. They screw it on this thing. They add a gauge. They pump it up to 14, and at 10 it starts going. They get a new one. They put it on there. They pump it up at 14. It's quiet. And at 15, it starts. So.
So I did that, Mark. I have a pressure tester.
Okay.
So I put it on the pressure tester. It's a 13-pound gap.
I'm not going to be able to help you, Brian. I'm not going to be able to help you because you're giving me symptoms, and they're all over the board. And I'm not going to be able to fix your car with you giving me symptoms and then tell me what the work you've done. What's the temperature, the highest temperature you see on the gauge? Is it 180, 190, 215, 230, 250? What's the highest you've seen?
At the thermostat housing with a temp gun, it got over about 231 at an idle.
That's nothing. So I don't know what you want it to run, but 230 is okay.
But the bubbling out of any thoughts on that?
Well, I just told you that all the symptoms you've given me so far, including that one, is a radiator cap. So you're seeing bubbles in the overflow, which means the radiator cap, the pressure inside the is overcoming the radiator cap, and it's spewing into the overflow. And you don't have any symptoms of a blown head gasket, or you'd said it. You don't have any symptoms of a water pump that's not pumping. You don't have the symptoms of a radiator that's plugged up. So, I mean, I'm dealing with what you're giving me. And, you know, a lot of what you're giving me, I've not seen in one vehicle. And so when you talk about all these different symptoms, your temperature gun is a good thing. Why don't you gun the front of the radiator and see if all the top corners, the bottom corners, the middle, see if the whole radiator is the same temperature. If it's not, and the bottom half of it is cooler than the top half of it, then the radiator's plugged up. So you can do that. The thermostat, if it's 180, Brian, it should open up at 180, 185. If it's a 210, it should open up at 220. You'll be able to know that because you're going to gun the thermostat housing and the upper hose, and you're going to see stagnant water and a stable low temperature, and then all of a sudden, you're going to see the whole thing get hot, and the thermostat just opened. So you just got a lot of moving parts in there, and I'm not going to be able to fix your car, but I can give you some advice on what you're looking for. And really, 240, 250 hauling horses is nothing. It's nothing. So you're going to go into the red zone at 260, 280, somewhere around there. But having your truck run at 230, heck, my Dodge will run at 230, hauling four horses on a twin axle trailer up to Payson. And so, and when you're moving, it should cool down once you start moving because the air across the radiator is going to help reduce the heat and help the radiator dissipate heat. So make sure the grill's not covered with a screen door and stuff like that. But if you run across any other symptoms or if you can put them all in one thing, then you can send it to me at mark@marksalem.com. But right now, you're kind of all over the board, and there's no conclusion that can be drawn. And you gunning some of the things on the car doesn't mean anything to us. There's no parameters that we would be used to. So, Mark at MarkSalem.com, and I'll see you here next Saturday.